This is Drew Mackey, and you're listening to Singing Mountain. Hey there. Today I'm talking about a game that I like a lot, but I feel doesn't really get enough credit in the Squaresoft RPG scene. I am talking about Final Fantasy: The Four Heroes of Light, a game that was released for the Nintendo DS in 2009, almost 10 years ago. Most Squaresoft RPGs find pretty healthy followings online, and I guess this game does have its fans, but I feel like they're not as loud or as many as most of the other games have, and I decided to give this week's episode to it, just to sing its praises and kind of place it in a greater context in RPG history, I guess. I titled this episode Bravely Default 1.0 because that is essentially what Four Heroes of Light is. Most significantly, this game was originally intended to have its own sequel, but that sequel actually ended up becoming Bravely Default. I'm glad it did get its own sequel, because the reviews for this game are actually not super positive. There's a lot of people who didn't like it very much, and had Square Enix not decided to give the basic mechanics another chance, we wouldn't have gotten Bravely Default, which is probably a more successful RPG overall, but has plenty of fans out there, and doesn't need someone like me to explain to you why it's good. Another thing that Four Heroes of Light has in common with Bravely Default and Bravely Second is the crown system, which in the latter two games is the Astra system. This is the job change system that allows you to change your clothes and put on a new outfit and get new special abilities. That asterisk system very much descends from the crown system in Four Heroes of Light, which works basically the same way, and which kind of still exists in the menus for Bravely Default and Bravely Second, because the different jobs you can choose for your characters and give yourself new powers are represented by the hats those characters wear. And that literally is taken from the crown system where, I mean, it's called the crown system. It's all about special hats. Four Heroes of Light has all the classes you would probably expect, like White Mage and Black Mage, but also some weird ones that have yet to find their way into Bravely Default, like Party Host, and I actually cannot remember what the Party Host actually does in battle, and then Seamstress, which is extra weird because I think it might be one of the few classes in the history of Final Fantasy job change systems where the default name for the class is actually in the feminine, like gender-wise. Seamstress is what the job is called even when one of the male characters have it, even though a seamstress technically, grammatically, is a feminine case noun. You just don't see too many of those. Or I guess you really don't see that many seamstresses in video games anyway. And what is the boy of seamstress? Taylor? Doesn't seem right. Seamster? Also, like Bravery Default, your party consists of two boys and two girls, and they kind of track one for one with the characters you play as in Bravely Default. The main character, Brant, is kind of your Tiz, and then there's this other guy who's a little mysterious named Juskoa, who's very much like Ring a Bell. And then you have your two female characters, Air and Yunita, a princess and her defender, and you could easily compare them to Agnes and Idea from Bravely Default. Also, none of these characters have noses, much like the characters in Bravely Default lack noses. And also, the characters in Final Fantasy Tactics lack noses. What have you got against noses, Square? That's weird. I actually looked it up to be sure. And in the official artwork for Bravely Default, those characters do have noses. But in the game, there is not a nose to be found. Another interesting connection between these games is the presence of the Adventurer, a red-suited, red-hatted Carmen Sandiego looking character who you meet in various dungeons and locations, and talking to this person allows you to save your game. This is true in Four Heroes of Light and the latter two games, and in each appearance, this person, is accompanied by a friendly fox companion who is quite charming. And I guess these two, the adventurer and the fox friend, together might be as close to anything emblematic for the entire series. And then there's Cringe and Ariadne, who are two characters you meet in this game, who are actually referenced by name in Bravely Second in a conversation between Magnolia and you. But if I'm remembering correctly, they're referenced in a way that suggests that the story of Cringe and Ariadne to the Bravely Default universe is like folklore and not something that ever actually happened. So it might just be that now, if we're trying to establish some sort of canon, Four Heroes of Light is a story that might be told in the Bravely Default world. I'm good with that. I like that it doesn't completely discount it from existing at all. Of course, this is a video game music podcast, and one of the things I find most charming about Four Heroes of Light is the music. This is something that does not actually cross over with Bravely Default or Bravely Second. Four Heroes of Light was composed in its entirety by Naoshi Mizuta, and he did not work on the latter two games, so the little touches that he put throughout the soundtrack to this game don't really come up again in the quasi-sequel spin-offs. I would describe the music in Four Heroes of Light as frequently doing two things, sometimes simultaneously, and often, if not simultaneously, alternatingly within the same composition. On one hand, Mizuta is doing a very good job of pushing the Nintendo DS to the limits of what its audio hardware can do, and frequently the music sounds very good, which is not something people will generally say of Nintendo DS games. You might notice that I don't actually play a whole lot of Nintendo DS on this podcast. There's a reason. Other times, however, Mizuta's music almost skews chiptune-ish, and it makes for an interesting mix of, like any chiptune, making you feel nostalgic, because it seems like it's something that should be familiar, but it's not something that you can put your finger on, because it is a new composition made in the style of an old composition, and specifically in the style of classic Super Nintendo and maybe even NES era RPGs. And mixing those two together, sometimes simultaneously, sometimes alternatingly, has the effect on me, at least, that I'm on an adventure, I'm encountering new things, but I'm never in too much danger because Mizuta puts these retro touches in that make me feel safe. I think that's a good thing, just because I like it when video game music pays homage to its origins, but also in this particular case, I think it's thematically appropriate to what the game is trying to do, because the game is very consciously a throwback to earlier RPGs. There's a lot of stuff in this game that references the first Final Fantasy, and in fact, the big bad ends up being Chaos, although not the same Chaos you fight in Final Fantasy 1, but similar. Also, the game is called Four Heroes of Light. I think Naoshi Mizuta did a really good job with this soundtrack. It's one of his earlier works for Square Enix. He'd actually previously worked for Capcom and had contributed music to Street Fighter Alpha, Resident Evil 2, and Rockman and Forte, and then later would do Final Fantasy XI and Final Fantasy Dimensions, which is very similarly self-referential in the way this game is, and most recently part of Final Fantasy XV. But because I feel like this game just doesn't get talked about enough, and I feel like in the span of Mizuta's work, people might not think of this one as being particularly notable, necessarily, I wanted to try to convince you that it is. What better way to convince you than by playing music? First, I'm going to play the theme song for Brant's hometown. It's the first town you encounter in the game, because that's where you live. It is titled Horn, the Home of the Wind. And then right behind that, I'm going to play Horn, the Home of the Wind, parentheses, Night. Almost all the towns have daylight and nighttime versions, and they're very pretty. I'm a sucker for those soft, sweet nighttime sounds. And I think Mizuta did a good job reinterpreting all the themes in a peaceful, sleepy nighttime way. Up next is a song you'll hear a lot in this game because it's the overworld theme. Maybe more so than other ones, I think you can hear the mix of contemporary for its time sounding music and old school throwback chiptuning music. And I think that's the perfect way to set the mood for this game. I gotta say, a bad overworld tune is a terrible, terrible thing, and I actually never got tired of hearing this one. So I'm gonna play that for you now, titled Walk the Ground. And then immediately behind that, I'm going to play Walk the Ground Night, because sometimes you walk at night. Thank you. Remember what I said about a bad overworld theme being something that can really kill an RPG? Another thing that can really kill an RPG is a bad battle theme, because if you're not walking on the overworld, you're probably spending a lot of time in battles. Mizuta did a really good job with the generic entry-level minion fight music, which is called Battle with Demons, which is not really appropriate because you fight a lot of cutesy enemies in this game that I would not call demons. But I think it does a great job of throwing you back to what those Final Fantasy 4, 5, and 6 battle themes sounded like, with just a little bit of kick up into richer instruments that were available in 2009 that weren't available in like the mid-90s. Also, as far as battle themes go, it's kind of a gentler, more jovial tune than you would have gotten even in those earlier Final Fantasy games, and that is entirely characteristic of how Mizuta approached almost all the music in this game. Have a listen. Like I said, that was a bit less heart-poundingly intense as some RPG battle themes kind of like to get, and maybe weirdly more Dragon Quest-like than Final Fantasy-like, now that I really think about it. Maybe that's a pretty good comparison that didn't occur to me before. The next track I'm going to play is the first major dungeon your party goes through. It is The Witch's Mansion. That's also the title of the song. The witch lives near Brant and has been causing trouble for some time, and you have to wonder, why do they let the witch live there? Why do they let her have a mansion that's bigger than the castle where the king lives? That seems just like a bad, like, public zoning effort on their part. But anyway, it makes for a nice dungeon. And if it's a witch's castle, he could have gone for standard, you're in a sinister place style RPG music. And he kind of does that at the beginning, but a few seconds in, it changes into something that's a little bit more melodic and pretty and, kind of sounds like some of the night music in the game, but I think it's appropriate because this witch you end up fighting is not really what you'd expect from an RPG boss as the plot keeps going. Thank you. Up next, I'm going to play the daytime and nighttime themes for the city of Urbeth, U-R-B-E-T-H. Weirdly, though, if you look at the OST track listing, the track is called Trading City Vulpes, V-U-L-P-E-S. Vulpes and Urbeth are very different sounding, but apparently they're both reasonable translations of the original Japanese. And for some reason, they went with Urbeth instead of Vulpes, even though I think Vulpes is a better sounding name. Vulpes is a trading city, or Urbeth is a trading city. And when you get there, you hear this melancholy medieval sounding tune that is very catchy and kind of reminds me of the Song of Storms from Ocarina of Time, but I like it very much. So you're going to hear that now. And then again, immediately behind that, the night version, which is also good. I'm going to play another one for you now, and this time it is the requisite Snow Town, RPG Snow Town theme. In this game, the town is Invidia. Invidia happens to be a place where you meet a very cute temporary party character named Rakota, which I am just realizing out loud is probably actually ricotta, like the cheese, but just transliterated into something that's not quite that. It would make sense. Another one of the temporary NPCs is named Tort. And apparently we all love naming characters after food. So anyway, she's a blue-haired girl with a bow that you meet in a snowy town, and you're going to hear the theme song for her snowy town now.
Thank you.
Being an RPG, you eventually acquire aerial transportation, and instead of a standard airship, it's more Secret of Mana-like because it's a flying dragon. Again, in trying to get a sense of how Mizuta is going for a more subdued, somber tone than another composer might have gone for, compare what you're going to hear now to the flammy theme from Secret of Mana, which is just exhilarating, kind of like a Bastion running Falcor in Neverending Story, kind of like exciting. This isn't that. It's a little sad, even though you think four kids riding a dragon would be having a pretty good time. Thank you. One of the more interesting locations in the game is a city that in the American translation is called Arbor, but apparently in the Japanese version was called Elva, E-L-V-A. And again, I guess those are reasonable interpretations of the original Japanese into Western letters. Weirdly, they're both super appropriate. Arbor, because this is a town that is basically nestled inside a tree, and Elva is also appropriate because it's the town where all the fairies and elves live. So that's a weird coincidence, I suppose. It's also a fun place where you all get turned into animals because humans are not allowed in this city. And the only way you can get in is by turning yourself into an animal. And when you do that, you get to see what each of your four characters would turn into in animal form. One of them's a cat. One of them's a rooster. What do you think that means? I don't know. Have a listen to the song. One of the towns you travel to in this game is a floating city in the sky that is beautiful, but a little unsettling, but also pretty to look at. And Mizuta did a good job capturing all those qualities into the music. In the game, this place is called Spelvia, S-P-E-L-V-I-A, but apparently another name for it is Superbia, because I guess it's superb. I don't know. I'm glad they went with Spelvia, to be honest. You're going to hear Heavenly Superbia, and then after that, Heavenly Superbia, parentheses, night. Thank you. Another major connection between this game and Bravely Default and Bravely Second is the presence of this game's bigger bads all being bonus bosses in Bravely Default and Bravely Second. Before you fight the big bad in this game, you have to fight seven demons who represent the seven deadly sins. Each of them, basically retaining their original models, all show up in Bravely Default and Bravely Second. And the music you hear when you fight these guys in the first game is titled The Demon King's Servants, which is a good title, I suppose. Considering these are tougher bosses than you've fought before, you'd think the tension would be ratcheted up a lot more than it actually is in this one. Again, it's a little lazy is not the right word. Chilled out? Peaceful? It's like a tranquil big boss fight. So the last two tracks I'm going to play for you relate to the last two areas of the game. And these are a little bit more on the mark for what you'd expect from most games in this genre. And I think I'm not going to try to reason out what Mizuta did here, but I would imagine he's been like playing it safe and playing it a little reserved this whole way. But now that you're almost done with the game, he's going to show you that, yes, I can do the big songs that every other video game does when you're almost at the end. The song I'm going to play for you next is the theme of the Star Chamber, which is the final dungeon of the game. The title is Demon King's Heartbeat, and it's a great final dungeon track. It sounds like exactly what it's supposed to be, and is not restrained and somber like the rest of the music you hear in this game. Have a listen. So after you make your way through the last dungeon, you get to the last boss. And the name of the track I'm going to play for you next is The Final Battle, because that's what it is. Suppose it's not a spoiler 10 years later, but the final boss of this game happens to be Chaos, though not the Chaos from Final Fantasy I, just another all-consuming bad guy named Chaos. I mean, it's a good name for a bad guy. If I thought the final dungeon theme was pretty much on the money for being the kind of brash music you'd expect in this context, this one's maybe an 8 out of 10 as far as how much it fits. It is not quite reaching those heights that you expect from a big boss fight. Like, I think about like Final Fantasy VI or Final Fantasy IV having like really propulsive music. This isn't that. It's a great catchy track, but he went in a different direction, and I respect that. Have listened to The Final Battle, the big boss theme from Final Fantasy, The Four Heroes of Light.
Thank you.
And that's it. I hope you enjoyed my little examination of the sweet and comparatively simple game that ultimately led to Bravely Default. Again, were this game not popular enough, we would have never gotten a Bravely Default, and that would be a tragedy, because I do love that game, and I'm glad so many other people do too. I had a lot of good memories going through this soundtrack and listening to music I hadn't heard in a long time, and I'm not going to say that I wish Naoshi Mizuta was involved in making the music for the Bravely games at all, because those games have great soundtracks in their own right. But there is something interesting he's doing here that mixes new stuff with old stuff and makes me feel nostalgic for all the right reasons, because this is a game that was all about nostalgia. If you'd like to tweet at me about why Final Fantasy The Four Heroes of Light sucks or doesn't suck, please do so at Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E, or at Singmopod, S-I-N-G-M-O-P-O-D. Singing Mountain is also on Facebook. If you like Facebook, you can get your updates there. You can subscribe to Singing Mountain pretty much anywhere you'd normally find a podcast. Wherever you do listen to it, please give me a rate and review. Those are helpful for all the reasons you've heard on every podcast ever. Singing Mountain is a Table Cakes podcast. Table Cakes is a Los Angeles-based podcast network. If you want to find out about some of the other cool shows we're doing, go to tablecakes.com. I know I said I wanted you to experience this game for yourself, but I kind of did spoil a bit of it. And also, by starting with the title screen song and working all the way through the game, I gave you some sense of what it'd be like to travel through Four Heroes of Light. So I guess my only choice then for the last song I'm playing in this episode as an outro track would be the game's ending theme, which is called The End of the Journey. I'll say this about Naoshi Mizuta: he does not get flowery with his track names. They're very easy to pick out what part of the game they go with. This is a very pretty track. It again contains all the things I like about this soundtrack, and I hope you enjoy it. Maybe one day Four Heroes of Light will be revisited in some form, though probably not, because basically Bravely Default is sort of the remade version of it already, just with a different plot. So, probably not going to happen, but hey, you listened to this episode, that counts for something. See ya. Thank you.
Table Cakes production.